Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying with your level of insurance, since I know you're not that pumped about it, I'm sure it's just sort of like a mammogram ATM machine.
Yeah.
Like it's probably like not even manned by a physician.
You see, you know, ATM, female, I think it's like a do-it-yourself car wash, you know?
Interesting.
Like right. You go there's in and no- they like there's some fumbly instructions that's like put your titty on the plate here and like wait for the green light to turn to red. Yeah.
or like when you go to like Hertz rent a car and the person's just on a screen on the like, how may I help you today? First we need your right tit, then we need your left tit.
Talk about a Hertz donut. I'm awake and I'm welcoming you to Sidework Podcast, guys. Hi, I'm your host, Andrea Wallace.
And I'm your host, Brooke Van Poplin. Hey, we had such a great write-up in LA Magazine.
I know! It was so great. Guys, thank you, LA Magazine, for speaking our truth.
Absolutely, and thank you all of you. Like, you guys are the reason that we have that truth to speak. This isn't like a just Andrea and I trying to lap up recognition. We feel like it's a big win for service industry workers in general. And more and more headlines, which we're going to discuss in a minute here, are really bringing to the forefront that workers are like, God damn us. God damn it. We want a $15 an hour minimum. And then you also tip us.
Yep.
This is crazy. And this can be a new normal, everyone. Like, wake up to it, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Before we jump into that, you were out of the state. You flew away. You went away.
Yes. Yes. There were definitely some shenanigans. All right. I have one quick story. And I can tell you, I do really think servers are sort of at the end of their ropes in many ways. But yeah, Sean and I were looking for a lunch spot at a kind of odd time during the day. And we went to this sort of brewery or whatever. Beautiful day, patio seating, still plenty of people at the space. And first of all, I walked in. The host was so unhappy to see me. You could tell like she was definitely caught between like a big party indoors, a messy patio outdoors. And it's been a minute since I've caught a little bit of that attitude where she's like, yeah, all the tables are dirty. But sure. Yeah. Yeah. You could sit outside. And I was like, okay. She's like, I'm going to have to put you on a wait so I can go clean. I was like, I get it. I came in so I wouldn't be the asshole who sits at a dirty table.
She's like, you don't know what I've seen. You don't know what I've seen.
I know. So we were kind of like, oh, this is weird. And then, you know, where you try not to get into those mental mind games, but you're like, okay, two people who walked in after us just got taken to a table. And you're like, all right, I'm going to want one more minute and then I'm just going to have to maybe say something. So then another server brings us to the table she cleaned off, and it's the only one without an umbrella. And I was just like, oh, you know, is it okay? Like, we were just hoping to, you know, sit under the umbrella, or could this umbrella be moved to this table, whatever, or can you add one? Like, there were umbrellas lined up against whatever. And so then while we're talking to her, this huge gust of wind picks up and flips the entire table, the dirty table with the umbrella, into the parking lot. So the glasses, the dishes, the half-eaten food, all the silverware just smash into the parking lot. And the host comes running out, all the servers, and we're like, oh gosh, whoa, sorry, sorry, sorry. And then she's just like, I'm sorry, we're closed to me. And I was like, wait, what? You know, like there were other tables, and she's like, umbrellas are just too dangerous. This has been happening. Sorry, we don't have any tables. And then basically was like, go home. It was very weird. Sean and I were really hungry too, and we're like, what's happening? I guess we have to leave. But like, I didn't flip, like the wind flipped the table over. And she's like, I just can't do this. She should have just said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. and everybody would have been like, had a moment together, and you would have been like, you would have been like, take my card. Yeah, I can help.
I know. here's a drink on me, you know. But instead, everyone else kept eating. They were definitely not closed. And Sean and I like were like, okay, bye. And it was really awkward because our car was parked in the parking lot right in front of the table. So we were like, I know.
That's
we
so
were just like
weird. Oh man.
It was just they
it had a
tell,
day.
Like,
yeah. Well, you guys, let's hop into some, just a little bit of top of show. You guys, just remember, you can go check out all the shows that we offer you now at One Star Network. If you like us, hey, guys, share your experience with a friend. If you love us or any of the new shows you're listening to, pay it forward. We know you guys love a call to action, especially when it comes to farts and jars. So when it comes to sharing how much you love us or any of the other shows, please do us a favor. Get us out there. Spread the word. You know, the more we're out there, the better for everybody, I think, personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can check out our social media is One Star Podcast Network on Instagram, and check out all of those podcasts that are on our network, and just give them all a subscribe. You know, if you haven't listened yet, don't rate and review, because that's not the truth, but you can subscribe. And once you do listen and enjoy, like this week is so funny, like quick rundown, and we'll get into a headline, but like Quaylen on Confessions of a Server was talking about dating in the restaurant, and it's his perspective, and he talks about why he no longer does that. So that's going to be a quick, funny, bite-sized listen. His episodes are about 30 minutes long, super fun. Marlon and Danny on the Modern Waiter podcast this week, they've got all the prepping you need for your Mother's Day brunch weekend coming up, and so it's a really great episode to listen to, so you can get your head in the game, decompress, sort of have your Hail Marys ready at the helm. Michael Munoz was talking this week on Wednesday, so yesterday happened to be Cinco de Mayo, so he was kind of breaking down Cinco de Mayo, talking with a queer chef who like specializes in, I think, like tortillas and tortilleria and tacos and delicious shit. And they just are kikiing all over the place. And there's a brand new Macaroni Zone out. Those guys are so fucking funny. Danny and James Austin Johnson are just like hilarious. And you will like whatever they talk about, even if it's totally goes off the rails. They're amazing. So give everybody a listen. And of course, as always, Copper and Heat is your sort of like documentary style, beautiful three seasons with different topics. So definitely go check out host Katie Osuna and Copper and Heat as well.
Amazing. And before we jump into this headline, I just want to say to you guys, for having Cinco de Mayo and Mother's Day in the same week, we see you. We salute you. We hope you're doing well. Those are two different ends of a spectrum. We hope you're surviving it, and please send us your stories if you have any. So,
oh yeah, this is going to be, we expect an influx. All right. Cinco de Mayo. Like, what if you had a double? What if you just started working on Wednesday and they didn't let you off until Sunday night?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a lot. Cinco de Madre. okay, first headline. So this coming to us from Virginia. So essentially, restaurants are increasing wages to attract new employees. There's a big Eater headline that I read too that's basically saying that a lot of people who worked in restaurants and maybe were laid off or furloughed during the pandemic that are now able to come back as restaurants are being able to reopen, staff is being able to increase, don't fucking want the jobs because of the measly wages that they're getting paid, and they're making more money off their unemployment benefits than they are, you know, from going in and working for $2 an hour and getting treated like shit by customers all the time. I understand right. it. Like,
absolutely. And let's be clear. These unemployment benefits ain't anything too special. So no. That should say something
right.
about the living wage we expect people to actually try and live with. It's not a living wage. And so they are absolutely kind of in a way striking right now.
Oh, yeah, know? Absolutely. So the hospitality family restaurant group out of Virginia has vastly increased the hours. The hourly rates of their employees across 8 different restaurants. So saying that they decided they were not going to pay that $2.30 antiquated pay rate for servers and bartenders anymore. We're going to figure out a way to pay a livable wage. Going on to say this is not okay, essentially. Like, people want to be paid for their time. They want to be valued for their time. To say to somebody that you're worth $2.13 an hour, that's not okay. So I love this, and I certainly think, and we've said it before, that the fucking cracks in the system are shining brighter. Everybody sees behind the curtain and how shitty and dumb things work in this industry when it comes to fair living wages. Yeah.
Absolutely. I also think it is worth maybe putting it out there to, like, everyone today. If there's someone in your life who doesn't work in the service industry, maybe say to them, did you know that we only get paid $2.13 an hour? How does that make you feel? Mm-hmm. Get the conversation started with someone outside of this business so that they can also have intelligent conversations, get inspired, and be restaurant allies.
Absolutely. Fuck, man. So this specific group has hired and retained 160 employees in the last 7 weeks. And they've retained 80% of those new hires. So guess what? This is fucking working.
It's working.
Virginia did have a legal increase in their minimum wage from $7.25 to $9.50 on May 1st. But these guys are going above and beyond to get people back in the door. And I really, like, if this is the future, I'm so happy about it.
Dude, this is giving me chills. People have just fallen through the cracks of society, not being able to afford their life or not being able to live their life because they have to work 24/7 to live.
Yeah.
And that's not living. Like, that's not okay. If you have to work every day of the week, doubles all day at your $6 an hour wage to be a dishwasher, like, what the fuck?
Absolutely. And these workers are needed, like, back. The demand is there, which is, like, crazy to say. Like, I mean, these jobs need to be filled, and, like, people want to work, but it's like for restaurant workers to now have, like, sort of an upper hand in a way is very interesting to me.
There should absolutely be a day without servers, and watch every entitled brat be like, excuse me, I'm sorry, what?
This How is also get the, what I want? It's also the horror movie we're gonna pitch to.
Yes, a day
Hollywood
servers.
But basically, again, talking about the article, hosts are making $15 an hour, servers are making $18 an hour, bartenders are making, like, at least $25 an hour, and that is basically helping to level out the unemployment hourly, which comes out to, like, $17 an hour, and then you're still getting tips, like, on top of it, you know, but you're guaranteed that base pay no matter what, which is
as you should. Mm-hmm. And for you as someone who comes into a restaurant, you know, now listen, right now, oh God, we might have to do an additional, maybe we should do an Instagram live and really discuss this. Mm-hmm. Right. I've been hearing some calls from the listeners that they demand our presence on an Instagram live soon. So we'll talk about that for sure. But you as the customer, you as the person who comes in, okay. The business itself is going to figure out how to give them a living wage. This does not excuse you from taking the tip off the table.
Right.
This is just a protection for them.
Right.
Because we all know for decades now, if you come into work and it's a rainy day and there are no tables, you just spent 8 hours at a job and took home $16. So listen, motherfucker, you're still going to pay until we completely overthrow the system and it becomes more European, where then we kind of denormalize tipping and it's across the board, wonderful, competitive living wages. Mm-hmm. Then we'll have that conversation. But as for now, you are going to make up
tip accordingly
for the years of abuse and they're going to get a living wage and tips.
Yep. Oh, man. All right. Well, we'll talk more about this as it progresses, because there's way more to talk about. But for now, let's please hop into some
server submitted
stories.
So this one, hot out of the oven. This one just came right in before we started recording, so I will add this. This is in reference to our latest episode from last week, where we were talking about the bakery bonanza.
Fun.
Which was a really fun, it's weird. I'm glad we waited on it, because I really got into it once we did it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling it at first, as you know. I was like, yeah, I don't know. We'll do it. And then we broke into it, and I was like, hell yeah, that was a fun one. But so this is in response to that. Let's get in there. Okay. Hello again, ladies. I wrote in before, after your retail episode, and said I had quit CVS in favor of a baking job after I got my baking and pastry degree. Right on. We remember you. I work at a Noah's Bagel in Northern California, which you told me are the Brugger's Bagels. They're like maybe the same company or chain.
Did I?
I will look into that.
Oh, I don't know if I said that, but I know there is
someone
chain.
Yeah. May have. Maybe Sean told me that. Anyways, so she says, she's writing us, it's currently 3:30 a.m. I've been here for an hour already. I've seen just about everything. Customers waiting outside a full 40 minutes before we open. People calling on Christmas Eve 2 hours before closing, asking for 3 dozen bagels. Odd sandwich requests. I actually overheard a woman say, yeah, can I get your tuna fish sandwich on a chocolate chip bagel?
She's literally
heard everything. The job is great in that as the baker, I have my own work area away from guests and people in general. Yes, wonderful. I can listen to music and podcasts, get my work done, and go home. The downside is that I'm a one-woman island. I don't have another baker with me to cover my breaks. So if something goes sideways, break time's over. Oof. I bake an assortment of pastries and roughly 900 bagels just to open the store.
Wow.
Then usually a couple smaller bakes to cover our catering needs and probably any orders that come in special. So we do have customers that will get a dozen, but insist on picking exactly which bagel they want, similar to the lady who wanted her chocolate chip cookies with the least amount of chocolate chips. Oh, Linda. Okay. Then proceed to take 10 minutes to pick their 13 bagels. I feel bad for my coworkers who have to deal with their dumbasses. Anyways, my words, not hers. Okay. The baker seems to double as a therapist since my station is right next to the walk-in. Everyone comes back to my area to vent, scream, hide, or occasionally cry it out. What gets my goat more than rude customers, though, is when the people who work up front don't communicate. I go up front every hour to make sure the case is well stocked and nothing is needed. If something happens in the meantime, I've got no way of knowing since I'm busy doing prep for the next day. Nothing says fun like going to clock out and have someone go, oh, by the way, we're out of 4 different flavors. Were you going to do another bake? Yeah. Oh, God. So Amanda goes on to say, I do love my job. You know, there aren't many jobs where one can be left to their own devices to listen to whatever they please while they work. But it truly is backbreaking. My knees are shot. I'm exhausted by 6 p.m., even on my days off, and my back hasn't stopped hurting in roughly 4 years.
Oh,
I swear I'm 32. I'm just trapped in the body of a 70-year-old. Oh, Godspeed and good tips, Amanda.
Oh, Amanda, thank you for sharing. And get yourself a foam roller if you don't have one already.
Yeah, we do have two words for you.
Foam roller. Get on that. Oh, also the Noah's Bagels are owned by Einstein Bagel, not Brugger's. Thank you, Brian.
Okay, yep,
Luke.
That's
oh, wait,
what I was thinking.
But both are. All three together. They're one conglomerate. I'm sorry. I was just Brian's like flagging me down. It's like he's behind. He's like in the control room with like a sign that's like all three, all three. So now we know.
Now we know. Well, and I can. Oh, wow. Yeah. It just really takes me back to a certain place in my life that job at Brugger's, you know, and I am from the Midwest. So that email was a real testament to how much I've graduated out of saying bagel, which I'm better. But I'm very self-conscious when I say that word. But I feel like I got through that email okay, saying bagel.
I don't like that people take so long to pick out their fucking dozen bagels.
It's crazy.
Like for me, when I go, I'm like trying to have a list in my head. I feel like I always fumble because I don't want to waste anybody's time. I'm like, like, you know, that's how I get. Sorry. I'm looking. I'm sorry. Like that's what I
hear. Just all plain. Yeah. And then you go home and everyone's like, what's wrong with you?
I don't know. I got upset. For sure. I fucking love it. More bakery stories if you guys have them.
Yeah. Much love and respect, Amanda. Keep on keeping on.
I did not order that.
All right. Next story. Here we go. Oh, my friends, do I have some stories for you? Firstly, I had a woman throw water in my face upon greeting them because it had started raining, and I asked them to step under a covering so I could find them a new table so they wouldn't get rained on.
Okay, that's a normal reaction right there. She's like, you're going to be wet, not me.
Fuck you. Oh, God. Next, I just received this glowing review about bottomless mimosas and a company-wide 20% service charge that's on every single menu. Listen, maybe I wasn't a helicopter serving enough for this table. Maybe next time I'll sit down and join them just to make sure every time they were halfway done with a pitcher of mimosas, I'd be there to pour champagne and orange juice down their throats. In fact, why don't I just juice the oranges table side just so you know I'm here to serve you. Let us remember that bottomless mimosas doesn't mean bottomless serving. Oh, man. A server is still attending to 10 other tables who also bought bottomless mimosas.
I'm sorry. That is a special kind of group of people who all want to be wasted on bottom shelf everything.
All right. She posted the review. Here it is.
Yeah. Read this review. Amazing.
Okay. 3 stars. This is the second time we had Christina as a server. She infrequently checked in at our table, making it nearly impossible to ask for refills on our bottomless mimosas. Not a very attentive server at all. On top of all this, we were charged a 20% gratuity fee when this didn't happen the first time we were there.
Oh my God, things changed?
If you do end up going to Germantown Garden for brunch, request to not have Christina as your waitress. 3 stars.
Okay, first of all, this person sounds like a drunk. You know, someone's like, I mean, I was not getting white girl wasted at a rate that felt comfortable for me. I felt like I was having honest and connected conversation and eye contact, and like the mimosa was not flowing.
All right.
This is crazy.
It's a lot.
First of all, you are trash if you go get, I mean, sorry, I know your whole restaurant does this, but if you, your whole day revolves around bottomless mimosas, you are a trash human. And also, restaurants do still want to try and make a little money off
right.
of you. So like I said, you're going to get basically bathtub versions of your Prosecco and your orange juice.
Right.
No, and there is a reason. They are not going to go out of their way to constantly make sure that when you're halfway through, they've already replaced it. Like, there is an art to it. They would be, ugh. Anyways.
Absolutely.
Just, people are so grubby.
I know. All right. So she goes on to say, let it be heard here first. Patrons have not gotten better or more respectful since the pandemic. They have gotten way worse. And beyond that, restaurants need a 20% tip policy just to keep a serving staff on board. Otherwise, there's no point being put through a serving shift to walk away with a tip average of 11%.
That's exactly what we were talking about.
So customers have to realize they're either going to get impeccable and organized service with an additional 20% tip, or they're going to have to get rundown servers who are stretched too far because no one wants to work for 11%. Sorry I'm ranting, but this just sucks and is humorous and sad in so many ways. I have no doubt I'm a good server, and I have constantly loved listening to you all and feel the comfort in frustration. Let us be strong, and if you ever come to Philly, remember to ask Christina, me, not to be your server. Godspeed and good tips, and a big fuck you to bottomless mimosas. Christina, holy shit. Holy shit. I can't believe that, like, someone threw water in your fucking face and was it on a bottomless mimosa shift? That is an insane thing for me to even hear. I just did, like, someone to be like, nope, here you go, I'm throwing water in your face. Like, that really outshines the bottomless mimosa ladies. Bad review. That's nothing in comparison, in my opinion.
I know. I've had someone throw a dinner roll at me to get my attention.
Oh my God.
You know, so, and I mean, like, Heather or Lindsay, who got her ass slapped, and the woman just said butter and slapped her ass.
Which Brian does to me all the time now, by the way.
Yes. But no, that's okay, because you guys are married and you gotta keep it spacey.
Honestly,
but when you're like, customer,
oh, did you not get all the mimosa you wanted?
You don't know what I've seen.
Like, I mean, that's really what it is. Like, and Christina, fucking point taken. I mean, these are the conversations that we're having, that, like, livable wages, appreciated server, like employees. Like, if you want to come to work, you want to make money and be appreciated. And
absolutely,
shit is fucking crazy. And let's be honest, shit was crazy before. But guess what? Now eyes are real open now. Just saying.
We got to get them even more open, like a clockwork orange level open, okay?
Yeah! As long as you're just putting that saline in my eyes, you know, keeping it hydrated. You guys, again, thank you so much for these server submitted stories. If you have any, please send them our way. We love to hear them. They bring so much joy to our lives, along with all the pain and sorrow and, you know, and humor that they bring along with them. Brooke, where should they send their stories if they have them?
Send them in. Sideworkpod@gmail.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
You guys, we're very happy today to have a great guest, comedian, writer. I, you know, oddly enough, was like searching for a song. I'm creating a playlist for my 15-year-old niece, and I was like, oh, which Stevie Wonder album is that on? But I know it's on the High Fidelity soundtrack, and Solomon writes for High Fidelity. And then I was like, oh, that's a fun coincidence. It's all coming together today. Solomon Giorgio is our guest
today,
you guys.
Hello.
Yes, Solomon.
Bonjour.
Better known, though, as your server at Denny's, I believe.
I was a server at 3 different Denny's at one point in time.
Oh, my God. Let's just have 3 separate segments, maybe. To break down,
I don't remember of 2 of those experiences because I was doing drugs.
Yeah, it's a real like Bowie moment, right? Yeah. Like certain albums don't remember being recorded. You know,
I guess that one went platinum. wasn't around for it.
Well, why don't we start off by you just telling us about your general history in the service industry?
Well, I guess my first job was at McDonald's. And that was like, I feel like I lasted all of 2 months in McDonald's. Cause that's, I think that is a hell job, that you either decide to be a person who is fine with cleaning up vomit every single day from a playpen or you're not.
Wow. How old were you when you worked at McDonald's?
Oh, God, I was like 15, 16. And it was just like first job. Like the minimum wage at the time, it was like $4.25.
Wow.
So truly scraps. I was getting nothing. And I was like, all right. Then, yeah, I think the next job was Subway. And then I took a break into retail.
Very nice. Very nice.
We'll be having you back for when we do our retail pivots.
Then moved right back into restaurants, took a break for the corporate world, started stand-up comedy, and then ended up back in the service industry because I was like, I hate being in an office.
Yeah.
I can just speak to that to such a degree. I tried to not do service industry and got hooked up with a temp firm briefly, and you quickly realize that like they don't give you a uniform to wear. You just have to come up with a bunch of nice looking clothing to work in a law firm at the front desk. And I was like, oh, I don't own anything that does not have a cigarette burn on it.
Well, also,
You
don't go, like, you can't do cocaine all night with the kitchen staff in an office job.
I mean, when you are a lawyer, you can do cocaine with them all night.
Yes.
You know, during happy hour until the then you can Wolf of Wall Street it. But it's just until you're accepted in that crew. You know?
Yeah, but everybody in the world of commercial print for barcodes, I can tell you right now, not partiers.
You're like, I really thought this would have gone differently. Anyway, I gotta go. Was this all in Seattle? Is that where you grew up?
All of my first jobs were in Seattle. I briefly lived outside for a little bit of it, but for the most part, I was in Seattle until I moved down here. And I was like, I was working at a bar that I did my show at in Seattle. So I was a cocktail server for a few years. And then I moved
down
here.
We did that too. We did that together. Worked and we played, you know, it was the best.
I loved it because it was like, they let me work whatever hours. If I had to go out of town for any gigs, if I had to go to a festival, they're like, perfect. So it was just like, yeah, it was really complimentary to like that, like very beginning of like going on the road and doing stuff of my career.
I'm sure it was like a really like adorable send off when you're like, I'm leaving for LA and I love you guys so much.
Yeah. Well, one of my best friends owned the bar, so we're still best friends. And
I love that.
Great. Yeah,
whenever I'm back up in Seattle, I stay with her.
Oh, it was great. We got to celebrate our buddy opening his place back up, and it's a special thing. You know, you're rooting for their business. You reach a certain age, and it's not even about the potential for a complimentary drink. You're really just happy for them as a business owner, you know.
I just like you as a person and all the great things you've done for people, especially artists, which are like comedians, the worst.
Oh yeah,
the worst of the worst. And I'm so
when you moved to LA, did you find like having to be in the service industry, being a server, being a cocktail server, I believe, a different game, a different vibe than
it was
truly in Seattle?
I feel like I auditioned more to become a server in Los Angeles than any other part in LA. I getting that first job took me a year to get to bring to the LA service industry, because it's so fucking competitive, because it's such a very, everyone here knows that job, it works the best if you want a career that's not that you don't want to hold on to.
Absolutely.
Like you want to be like, it's the job that's like, hey, I have an audition, I don't mind calling in or switching a shift with somebody. You can't do that with every job.
No, it's also, or just the turnover rate. Like you can say to yourself, I'll go get another restaurant job because I really, really want to go to this audition. And so I just won't show up, you know? And yeah, it's a whole game too, because it's like, as we all know, actors are, you know, when it's like, I'm an actor, and people are like, and what part in the restaurant do you play? You know, and are you the hostess, the bartender, or the server, or a manager? you know.
Yes, it was very much. It was like I was so like I remember just being at like my like the end of my rope. I was crashing on couches. Like I was about to go back home, and then Umami opened a location in the Grove. And
nice.
And nice. I was at a point where I was like, they didn't hire me as a server. They were like, do you want to be a busser? And I was like, well, fuck, sure. I have no
great.
Like I have no experience as a busser, but I'll do that job. And I lasted a few months there, and I moved over to Raisin Stark at LACMA, which is a bunch of comedians working there. Nico Santos was the host at the time.
Okay, cool.
I know that yes. person. All right.
He brought in a lot of us to work there. So that was me, Marcelo Arguello, Chris Garcia. No, sorry, not. I apologize. Frankie Quinones. I apologize to Chris Garcia yes. for saying his name. he did not been, work there.
He's just been at the top of all of our feeds, him and his cute baby. So, you know.
He's just on that list of San Francisco comics that...
yep.
That moved down around the same time, but like a lot of us work there. Greg Edwards was there. Like it was like a good crew of me and a bunch of comics via San Francisco. And it was like they loved working with us, particularly because we're all like immigrant comics. And so there was like, and or yes, like people right. call us, like, you guys have good work ethic. And like, yeah, surprisingly. Yeah, <I know.
laughs> You're like, it's not like my dad's a studio exec and he told me to get a restaurant job to build a backbone. You know, it's.
You're like, no, I just have had to work really hard since I was born. Yeah. Thank you.
Solomon, I have to say, like, I get very, like, jealousy is not the word, but just like, it's like I cut my teeth and I have my crew in New York. And I didn't know, I showed up in LA to a lot of you thriving and already being, you know, the people that you are with your status. And it's fun to hear the underdog years because I don't know you like that, you know. Well, and I, of course... Yeah.
Thank you. I assure you, there was I was working up until 5 years ago. So,
same. When you met me, you know, yeah. I got a break on a show and was able to walk away. And yeah, but it's just like there's a whole slew of us in Brooklyn who used to all like just it was like a constant swinging, flapping kitchen door of all of us working at this like. Restaurant that's, let's face it, was like a halfway house for comedians.
Yeah.
If you could hang on to a job, serve a drink or two or whatever, we were all very, very gainfully employed at this one place called Gravy with a connected restaurant called Pacifico. Anyways.
Yes. It's very much like every city does have that. And then there's also the majority, there's also the group of us that are like, what do you do? How do you make money?
Uh-huh. Right.
Like, how are you well, existing? Yeah. Who are you like, charming?
Who I agree. Are you?
Like you're I see you on your Instagram, it says you're out to lunch again on a weekday. Like I don't know. And that's such a fucking LA thing. Like I remember first moving here and being like, why is everybody at lunch all the time? Why aren't people working? And yeah, and you just never know. Where someone's coming sure. from or where they're getting their money. Who knows?
Can I ask, were all the Denny's Seattle based or did any
oh,
of
yeah,
them...
all those Denny's were, well, they were okay. Seattle and surrounding areas based.
And surrounding areas based.
So I was in North Seattle if mostly.
Okay, got it. And if you've still ever set foot in a Denny's, does a Seattle's Denny have its own fucking vibe? Like poets late night, you know, writing...
The coffee's slightly better.
Well, no.
right, exactly.
The coffee's the same terrible crap all across the board.
Yeah, of course.
Regardless of the location. It's because there's two types of Denny's. And they're the okay. same. All like they might be different sizes, but they're saying like there's the standard model Denny's that everyone is familiar with, and then there's the mm-hmm. Denny's Diner, which is that new wave 50s
oh,
pop
yeah,
diner.
Yeah.
So they exist at the same time, but they are definitely almost in a different decade. Like one of them is like this new wave 50s motif, while the other one is very still classic Denny's motif. And they both exist, and they both have the same menu because Denny's is a franchise, and
of course.
It's a very weird kind of setup with everything. But yeah, it's nothing is spectacularly different food wise. I'll tell you that.
Got it. It's just like what? You know, their booths are like. A different style if you're in the 50s throwback mm. era.
Yeah, yes. Or if you get like a classic 70s, 80s situation happening. What was your preferred shift at the Denny's?
So it really depends, because it's like there was like for because like at the time, because I was young, I wanted to hang out more than I wanted to make a shit ton of money. So there was that. There's the graveyard shift, which sucks because you're there till fucking 6 in the morning. But getting the shift that's right before the late shift brings in the right before the graveyard shift comes in, that was the perfect shift, because then you get to hang out with your other coworkers and go to like the pool hall and get drunk with them in the parking lot because you're still 20.
That's the shift that you're like, oh, this is when people order steak at Denny's. Mm-hmm.
Like there's never like it was never like Denny's in a, like Denny's can is like the ones the servers who knew how to make money at Denny's knew those shifts very well, and there was no way you were going to get them from them.
Right.
Like they've been working at Denny's for 10 years, which is like in itself is like that's long enough for me never to take any of your shifts, and I do not want any of your shifts because I don't want to fight for a shift at Denny's.
Absolutely. 10 years you have earned your shifts, like they are yours forever, unless you care to give them away, and that should be the rules.
That's essentially what it is. Like if I ever got a shift, the money making shifts, it was because one of them was like, I want a day off and you're the only person that will say yes. And
well, it's dangerous because then it's like your eyes are forever open that there is a money-making shift at Denny's. And you're like, I'm telling everyone. And they're like, no one can know our secret and our truth, you know?
But it's like not even that great of a money. Like it's like the money-making shift at Denny's, you make $100 in tips.
Right.
Tops.
Right.
Tops.
Sure.
And and it's blood money. It is not... It is no one that walks to Denny's like 20% is how I tip. That's not the vibe that comes in to a Denny's.
It's like, I feel like, you know, I have no hate toward Denny's. It's just like in New York, why would you go to a Denny's when there are like a million, you know, late night is the name of the game in New York. But now that I've been in LA for like 5-ish years, Andrea and I, we got up in the middle of the night a couple years ago to watch like a super wolf moon in Griffith Park.
It was a full lunar eclipse, actually.
Yes, with a bunch of astronomers. And it was just such an odd feeling. And we're like, we are starving. It's 5 in the morning. Where do we go? And we like hit the Denny's on San Fernando. Wow.
Oh,
and
it was incredible.
I had a moon over Miami, baby.
It was great. I feel like that's sort of it's because it's very rare. Like we are in the age group that is very rarely at Denny's. That's
yes.
Like there
used to be. Yes. But yes.
Well, even I think now, like I think like you either are very young, and this is like the diner near you, and at the time too, especially it's you can smoke inside.
Right.
So, it was a phenomenal hangout spot for anyone under 21.
When you're in high school, that's like all you do. If you live in the suburbs, for sure.
Coffee and cigarettes.
And a bowl full of change as a tip. I remember.
Oh, my God. There was probably a lot of like pulling like change off a table into your apron. Ugh. I wonder if the kids in the suburbs are still hanging out at Denny's. Probably.
There's nothing else going on.
There really isn't.
Well, let's get started on today's topic, you guys. Mm-hmm. I want to chat. Let's all chat about immigrants and how they shape the restaurant industry and how they're the fucking backbone of the industry. Solomon, you yourself are an immigrant, correct? Can you speak to that in your story and tell us about that?
I can speak to it because but I also come in the form of I get the fancier version of the immigrant treatment because I speak English. They speak English. I speak English with an American accent, which gives me a lot of privilege. Because people don't talk down to me like I'm an idiot because I just have a slight accent. But yeah, it's like without a doubt, no restaurant would thrive without the genuine cheap labor that immigrants provide. It is.
Yeah.
But that's also, it opens it to abuse a lot of the time. Because it's like, you expect somebody to be an absolute workhorse for literally the smallest money. So when they finally kick back and realize they're being treated terribly.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all know the guy, or the dishwasher, the line cook, like who never fucking takes a day off.
Never.
Who you've never seen not come to work.
Yep.
And if something does happen, if something horrible has happened in their life.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And you have to wonder too, like, you know, is it horrible enough? Like, did something go wrong? Are they literally being, you know, deported? Mm-hmm. Is there a family crisis? Like, it's just right, because they are just some of the most faithful, hard workers you've ever worked with. So it's that feeling of like, something's up.
Yeah.
I can't believe they're not here. Manny did not show up, you know? Yeah. Like,
yeah, something's wrong.
At the end of the day, it's like it's such a, it's truly the saddest story for me, just because they, like, I see how hard they work, and it's, and I'm like, I was, as a server, I try to do like, emphasize tipping out the dishwasher, tipping out mm-hmm. anyone in the kitchen that I see. Ben, like, I'm ultimately benefiting from their cheap labor. So
yeah.
So, and that, like, that's essentially what the that's a tipping system in general. Like, the people that eat in a restaurant are benefiting out of my cheap labor. So therefore I have to make sure that it's a terrible version. It's trickle down
economics.
Working in the saddest way possible. it's still a sad process.
So a small history of immigration and restaurants in the U.S. So unless you are a native indigenous person from the United States, you're fucking descended from immigrants, dude. Like, period. You know, and it's always been shitty. So let's go back to March of 1790 when Congress passes the first law about who should be granted U.S. citizenship. So the Naturalization Act of 1790 allows any free white person of good character who has been living in the United States for 2 years or longer to apply for citizenship. Without citizenship, non-white residents are denied basic constitutional protections, including the right to vote, own property, or testify in court. This hasn't changed at all.
I know. I was like, are you like, fast forward 250 years?
Fast forward. Still a little loose. Still not 100%. Still a little like, do you guys, maybe you guys should go. Yeah.
So basically what we're seeing as far as restaurants and how they're existing at that time, there's really not much happening in the U.S. Not until we're seeing a wave of Irish immigration in the 1800s do we start to see things like Irish pubs pop up, you know. And we've all seen the fucking Far and Away movies where, like, the Irish immigrants come to the big city, come to New York, and where do they get jobs? They get jobs at fucking restaurants, you guys. Like, this just, again, keeps happening. So we have a lot of people coming in. We have people swarming in. They're fleeing. They're either sick or dying from the long journey. They're like, they're coming to the big cities on the East Coast, and they're basically like starting new neighborhoods. Restaurants are popping up. Then we get the Civil War that happens, which is more German and Irish settlers after that, like, go west. You know, German settlers go to like the Midwest. Hello, beer is fucking born, you know, in the United States. All the delicious beer that we drink today comes from German immigrants. After that, we have the Chinese coming in to work the railroads. Then we have the Chinese Exclusion Act that starts. So basically, they're just, Chinese come in to do all our hard labor, literally build railroads, literally like build the infrastructure that we know today. And basically, once that starts happening, they're just like, nope, too many. You gotta go. Mm-hmm. It's just basically like xenophobia at its finest. Like, anybody who comes into the country to make it better is in like, no, you're not appreciated ever.
But it's like, it's this thing that constantly happens, with, especially with every immigrant group. Like what's going on right now with the anti-mask, like, people and being anti-Asian. It's a very similar issue in the past. Like, they find their way to do the same thing again. They did it with MSG as well, scare. Like, the MSG scare to push Asian people out as well. So it's like this is like the fourth cycle of anti-Asian pushback.
And at the same time, there's still this like American dream out there that is like, it outweighs and outshines, like, everybody is like, well, really bad things might happen to you, but the idea of coming and having a fresh start. And as the timeline continues to like 1907, when there's a huge like Japanese like mm-hmm. immigrant an influx coming in, onto like in the 1920s, like, and after fucking World War II, we get like Jewish like refugees coming in. I mean, onto like the Mexicans come in during World War II to like fill shortages in factories, you know.
Well,
like,
to be fair, they were kicked out of where they were technically Native Americans that were kicked out of their homes that are coming back.
Yes, that's very true. That is very true.
So you. I wouldn't like this. Mexicans became immigrants in this country, but they were never immigrants to begin with.
To begin with,
absolutely. I mean, and what I keep saying when I hear like beer, when I hear, all I'm thinking is like the food that is being created with like all of these waves of people that are coming in, and how these immigrants and their subgroups are like opening restaurants for themselves. They're opening restaurants for other people to try it. They're building what we now call like the, like a food experience, a restaurant experience, and like shaping the palate. Like, we get to eat anything we fucking want. Now.
We really do. You know, I mean, we've done the research too that like just in general, like diners are a very Greek American immigrant experience. You look at all the ways that we consider our lifestyle to be really American.
Yeah.
And it was born on the back of someone who emigrated here from a different country and completely shaped. It's like people never stop to think like, why do I eat gyros? You know, like, why are they everywhere? Like, your mom didn't serve that if you're from Rochester, Michigan, like where I'm from. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's such a, you know, and what I love obviously about food and the service industry, which, you know, not to like pretend like I'm a little mini, like, you know, food blogger Anthony Bourdain person, but it's just like food is the thing that brings us all to the table, yet how are we so blind to it in every other aspect of the way we coexist together? You know, it's such a great gateway to share a meal with someone and realize the origin of why you're enjoying this delicious food, but people can't apply it to common sense parts of their life. Outside of that, it's very weird.
It's a very, like, it's very confused. Like, it's kind of like what are the, like, the best restaurant experience you can get is like a family restaurant from a specific, like, from another country. Like it's never going to be the best looking place. If the people,
harsh lighting,
Lighting, thick accents, you're going to have probably one of the best meals of your life.
And be treated truly like you are having a big family style meal, which, you know, with people who consider themselves like truly American, it's like, y'all are not about family at all. You don't even know what it's like to have, you know, because so much of, and we've talked about this, is like so much of my first dining experience jobs as a restaurant server in Detroit were like, I worked in all Arab American restaurants and was completely just brought in and worked with people from, you know, anywhere from Jordan to Tunisia to, oh my God, like Syria, Turkey, Lebanon was, you know, I loved that family, lived with them part of the time and like taught their daughters English, and they would like, come to our club and experience how we hang out, and it would be great grandmother to the youngest grandchild all in a club until 3 a.m, constantly eating, communal dancing. You're all together all the time. American families ain't into family that much.
Yeah. Eat in front of the TV and shut your mouth. I feel like is how my house was, you know, anyways.
Yeah. I there's a sort of like, just like an acceptance in my family. Like, you're going to take care of your mom. She's going to live with you. That's just the simple fact. There's no ways around it. She's not going to no home. She's going to live with you.
Right.
Oh God. Yeah, that's funny you bring that up. I'm like, we haven't even had that convo, but I'm just like, if I can and will, like, of course they're gonna just,
oh yeah, I know it's gonna be an invasion of my privacy, and I just have to accept that fact.
Yeah, absolutely.
Respect your elders.
Ah! I love you, mommy.
So let's break down just three. There's other many other reasons, but three of maybe the main reasons why immigrants come to the U.S. So number one would be against their will, for sure. Black indigenous people of color fucking kidnapped and enslaved. They came and provided knowledge, labor, and even the raw fucking materials that shaped and changed the food of the South that we know now as Gullah, that we know as Low Country. So forced into slavery, they cooked and waited on white assholes. On top of other hundreds of horrors, obviously, they had to endure. You know, we've talked about this before on the podcast too, Solomon, that post-emancipation, most of the work that could be found was in restaurants and bars and private homes as servers and bartenders and cooks and maids. And these were primarily tipping jobs that provided no fucking base pay whatsoever. So all you relied on was tips. So it's just another form of enslavement in a way. It's just another way to be oppressed. And today these practices are still there. They still exist. Like, we just were like, yeah, sure, this model works in this like fucking white supremacist world. Just run with it like everything else.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, it's effectively, yeah, that's why like tipping culture is very American born and not really any place else, because there's like, you just pay people a living wage. It just makes sense.
Right.
There's like, why would you not pay people a living wage?
They're doing a job, you know? And yeah, we covered it several months ago too, just going into the origin of tipping, you know, and it's absolutely worth reiterating that it was just, yeah, like Andrea said, like just another way to not ensure a recently freed slave that they could have a job, but free labor. So it was just, it's, you know, we don't try and be so on the nose with stuff. We like to give, you know, background to it, but the art, like the origins of tipping is yet another iteration of slave labor.
Yes.
Yeah.
But sometimes they might give you a dollar, but they don't have to if they don't want to. And you just spent 16 hours of your day lugging everyone's stuff all over on and off a train.
And that is just the way it is. And you're like, yeah. Cool.
Great.
Absolutely.
Good job.
Second would be to flee persecution. So waves of refugees have been entering this country for decades to escape their current situations, war, famine, fucking genocide, corrupt governments in countries all over the world have left its citizens like hopeless and afraid. And America has opened its arms to refugees for years and years and years.
Which
to
is,
come in.
I always like to point out that America has had a big hand in ruining many other countries. And their stipulations on refugees is truly, wow, like, that is the most shameful part of this country. It's like, you should be accepting every single refugee because you had a hand in whatever detriment that occurred in that country.
Right. <Wow.
laughs> Absolutely. Yeah. It's almost like they were just like, oops, I guess come in now. Sorry. Yeah. Like, oh, geez.
It's every.
I did that.
Every Western country that is complaining about refugees and how many they're dealing with. They have every, like, not one of them has an innocent bone in them to not be able to be like, you know what, we'll accept all of you since we fucked over your country so hard.
Wow.
Truly.
I mean, and then, like, coming here and it got starting from fucking nothing, right? Like, trying to find work once you're here can be such a defeating task. But restaurants, time and time and again, are places where if you don't speak English or you don't have any skills, you can, like, easily get hired and start a brand new life. So this guy, he was a teenager alone on the border of Iran and Turkey in 1984, and his family had paid people to smuggle him from Tehran to escape their war-torn country. He endured a series of car and bus rides only to be robbed of all his money. He had two guys take him to Turkey and left to fend for himself. So he crossed the border on foot, and then he was promptly arrested by Turkish military. He said, "I thought I was going to die. I thought that was it." He endured 40 days in a Turkish prison before being reunited with his family in Istanbul, where they made their way to the U.S. embassy. After several months, they were allowed to move back to the U.S. He had given up hope. And then some weeks later, they contacted him to say his paperwork was ready, and then they could move to the U.S. He landed in L.A., and his uncle, who met him there, took him to a Jack in the Box the first day he was there to, like, basically get a job. And nobody would give him a job, and he couldn't speak English. And at Jack in the Box, they made him feel comfortable. They trained him. They taught him. You know, he says this industry is so unique. And he worked his way up through the fucking company, ultimately landing in San Diego office, and then eventually became a partner and opened 100 Jack in the Box locations. So this is what can happen, I think, personally, when nothing in your life can be any fucking worse than what you went through already. So why wouldn't you persevere and take chances anytime you get it, man?
That's true. Like, but
again,
also,
we go,
I feel,
back to that work ethic, baby.
Yeah.
But I also feel like there are many people that have who've shut up to Jack in the Box in that same situation and got nowhere.
Yes, nowhere, absolutely. I know. It is hard to just be like to read one shiny story and think everything's okay, because it is not. You know,
listen. For some of us, it's in our darkest hours that we find ourselves at a Jack in the Box, and it's okay. When my dad's like, "I need a breakfast, Jack," you know, it's just like, oh boy, Mark's off the rails again. Okay, anyways,
look,
but
as somebody who's ordered Jack in the Box sober, it is a journey. it is an emotional low point
I know, but like the fast food franchise business, especially for immigrants, like it really is kind of a hand in glove situation where it's like, do you have the fortitude to learn the rules, mm-hmm. kind of go by the rule book, make it all happen? And yes, I mean, like it truly is a success story in a lot of ways.
It is. You know? And I also like, but yeah, that was definitely the 80s and the 90s. But now I think it is out, like that is an impossible dream because it's that minimum wage.
Oh man.
It is truly a most savage and cruel thing because it means it's nothing. It's like everything costs so much everywhere.
I know. I mean, and that was like the third point I was going to be like, to live the American dream. And it's like, well, fuck, do we even like talk about this now that you said that? But it's like, it's really just this whitewashed fairy tale version that we're shown all the time, that it's just like, oh, come here. Like, you know, it's like fucking there are no cats in America. Like it's that part of it, you know,
it is,
where...
It is.
Yeah.
It's just also like it's set now. Poverty here is at like it's literally America is a first world country wrapped in a third world country. It is it is doing everything possible to maintain a poverty line because poverty is profit and it's so like now it's just I don't like coming here for immigrants. I feel so bad because it's like there's that recovery that my parents even had as people who didn't speak English and were able to get some kind of work. Like that is so difficult.
That's very different now. Yep. That dream seems, you know, and I personally cannot speak, you know, I won't speak to your experience. It's just from, you know, us trying to be educated and learn what's going on. But, you know, and it's a situation where I guess the best way to sort of compare it in some ways for people who might not be able to understand is like you also have people who believe in this country that they're like native born, right to be here,
right,
can't make ends meet and are not understanding why this American dream is failing them, and they won't look at the government and or how false of a promise capitalism is. And so then on top of already being terrible pay wages, now you've got like white people punching down and blaming immigrants.
Yeah.
Right.
So
forever though, I feel like that's just how the fucking disgusting like chess game is played. Like,
yeah.
You know,
I think that I definitely believe there's two ways to it, but also like, I feel like the attack on immigrants has been consistent. So that's why I feel like it's definitely, there's always going to be the play of what the economy is doing right now. But I also believe that generally so many of these people are hateful. And they're becoming more hateful, and they I think they find justifications, but I feel like they're just terrible people. A lot of them are.
Well, and what we've said, you know, like the comparisons just in general of how our government works is the lawmakers at the top who should be doing the jobs, who should be putting policies in place to protect and help everyone prosper, have a little dignity in their life. Like one of the most easy to understand moments is even just putting frontline restaurant workers like that the government bows out and says no more, no masks, no distancing, mm-hmm. no whatever, and then leaves it up to you, the restaurant, to put rules in place and then leave you to just fight, you know, mano a mano against other customers. Yeah. Which then jeopardizes your business if enough people want to come in and be like, we're going to stop coming here because you forced mm-hmm. mask mandates instead of the government doing what their job entails, which is to, you know, protect the citizens and whatever. But they have a lot of fun pitting us against one another we forget about them not doing their jobs.
Yeah, especially
you know?
Like if you're making somebody working, like once an Uber driver becomes a essential worker during a pandemic, then it's like, what are you doing? What are we doing here for these people? We're doing literally nothing to protect anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's take a little Denny's break. let's let everything cool down a bit and like dive back into a little Denny's. Solomon, do you have any like chestnut stories that you would like to tell us about working at Denny's?
Denny's was a very, very special place. I have a couple of stories that I've told a few times. One of them was a couple showed up and I sat them, and as I sat them, the gentleman in the marriage was like, hey, just to let you know, a third, we're actually meeting up with somebody for a threesome here, like after we leave here, and so this is our first time meeting her, so can you just let her know that we're over here? I'm like, okay, that's, I guess, good for you and your threesome.
So much information.
and she shows up. And as I'm got like, and then I point her to the table, and the guy, like from across the room, screams, "Sorry, we're both ugly."
They're so nervous about the threesome.
I kind of thought he was going to be like, "Can you direct me toward the least shart my pants food item? Because we're about to do a threesome. We really want to impress this third."
To be fair, no one was attractive in this group. So no one, like, it wasn't like, oh, yeah. So the joke landed on her part.
I was hoping it would be kind of like a Romeo and Michelle moment where they were like, do you have any specials for people who are about to have threesomes? Is that something you guys do?
I think that's a grand slam, my friends.
I mean, you could say moons are Miami to describe any sexual act. Yes. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, but Grand Slam is a solid triple. That's three runs.
it is three runs.
I understand baseball and Denny's.
No, Grand Slam is four runs because it's the bases are loaded.
Well, it's three on base, and I know, but let me have it. A three run.
A triple play. What's really what we want?
Triple play, but we don't have a triple play at Denny's.
Yeah.
Okay. There's people who are into baseball rolling their eyes so fucking hard listening to us talk right now.
If they're into baseball, I don't know how much of the immigrant conversation they got through.
There are many immigrant baseball players. There is.
But fans?
No, I don't know. I love baseball, so I would argue that with you. All right, so let's dive back in. And this is a very NPR thing I'm about to say, but let's do the numbers.
Are you Kai Rizdal?
Yeah. Okay. So just some stats, you guys, about undocumented workers in restaurants. So this is from Eater. The undocumented comprise 10% of all restaurant employees in the U.S., as many as 40% in urban areas such as L.A. and New York. Undocumented immigrants as a whole pay billions in tax and a higher effective tax rate than the top 1% of taxpayers, 8% versus 5.4%. And then the Pew Research Center estimates that about 10% of the industry workforce is basically undocumented workers, all working in low pay, back of house jobs without fucking worker protection. So this basically means they're paying more taxes with no benefits. And specifically right now in this pandemic, no unemployment benefits.
So yes, all ICE is just a money drain from a very profitable part of the population. Like the country's making free money because they are not getting any money back. There's no tax refund. They are just paying taxes.
It's a lot to absorb. Nobody fucking even thinks about that. I don't know. I think people assume that like undocumented workers, people who come, they're just like, they want a free meal. They want a free ticket. They're not going to pay. They're not going to do anything. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Right. But again, you know, when you don't even totally understand the lie you've been sold and don't understand why you're not succeeding, it's very, very easy to lean into that narrative. It helps. You know, again, this is all like, listen, I've been in therapy for 4 years, 4 or 5 years. You know, like stories we tell ourselves versus what the truth is, you know, and the stories are made to comfort our brains and our narrative and the things that help us uphold our belief systems. And I think it's just been I'm not trying to go super negative on it because I do think the work and the groundwork has been laid to open people's eyes, especially in the service industry. The word's getting out a little bit more so, with, you know, movements like One Fair Wage Official and some of this other stuff. But it's just a very unfortunate, convoluted myth that immigrants are here literally just like glad handing, freeloading, all this stuff. And to quote a comedian we all know, are you working hard or hardly working? He's just got a great about like people who are so racist and stupid and wrong about immigrants, where he's just like, Mexicans, or he's like, lazy Mexicans, but then they also say they're all taking our jobs. Yes. And it's like, well, which is it?
Yeah,
you can't be both, you know. Yeah. And
it's a difficult space to live in, to be lazy and to have all the jobs.
I have all the jobs. Yep, exactly.
It's all these wonderful dog whistles mm-hmm. that's beautifully coded into people's belief system. But in general, I think it's just a refusal to accept the truth, which is there is a workforce that is here. It's beneficial to this country because it's willing to work for less and pay out taxes without questioning right. it.
And it is not just, you know, like for the joy of getting some restaurant food. It is our entire agriculture and farming system is yes. also built on the back of immigrant labor and exploiting right. that.
And it's like, and at the end of the day, it's like, they think like, if you are undocumented, you're not getting any social services. You're not getting food stamps. You're not getting welfare. Like, these are not things that you have access to as an undocumented person. It's impossible. What kind of government do you think we have that's handing out money to people in any way, shape, or form? Those programs require proof, and undocumented people don't have that proof. It is a tedious, like, I've gotten food stamps in my life. It was the hardest thing to do for somebody who was eligible to get food stamps. I could only imagine somebody who doesn't have that documentation trying to even attempt to get it.
Yeah.
So there's no handouts being if a lot of white Americans understood that they are the greatest beneficiaries to every social program, including affirmative action.
Right.
Fuck. That would be a different story. But the case is that everything is presented to them in a way of like, these are the people taking everything from you, when it's clearly not that at all in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's, you know, and then I think it's a specific type of exploitation that happens then in the restaurant yeah. industry, where right. when you know you could, you know, when you're hanging something over someone who works for you who's undocumented, like
yes.
you can garnish wages, yes. you can withhold yes. paychecks, you can
scream and yell, yep,
call ICE, the entire mm-hmm. thing. And
yeah. Just to always have like fear pulsing through your body, not have any reliability on like, am I going to get fired today? I don't have any rights. Like what? I mean, it's a lot to consume, just to try and fucking make it and be happy and be stable and provide for yourself and your family. That's a lot of moving parts to be an immigrant in the U.S.
And it's,
you know?
And it's truly surprising how little needs to be done to really fix the issue. How corporations can pay out a little more without not losing, like they're going to profit regardless. We can even pay out a little more and they still would if a menu item was a dollar more at McDonald's, then every worker there would actually be able to enjoy a living wage. But yep. yet they don't want to do these kind of things that would generally benefit everyone involved, from health insurance to just like to education support. Like they try to do way below the bare minimum, and it's surprising, and it just sucks that we don't have a restaurant union that can actually protect restaurant employees. Yeah. And I don't think that's ever going to happen anytime soon, because we live in an anti-union country.
I mean, it's slowly starting to happen. It's starting to happen. We hear about movements happening all the time. Small places, bigger places. You know, we talk about Vegas a ton. Mm-hmm. They have a giant restaurant union. Everybody gets a fair wage. You can start out as a busser and like train your way to being a floor captain. Like, they take care of their own. And I certainly hope with the way things are going right now, it's just going to keep churning yeah. and moving.
Yeah, I think essentially it's what's going to happen, because there's so many, like there's way more workers than not. And corporations can only get away with so much.
Uh-huh.
Before we decide to burn the witch.
Yeah. You know, and also let's just none of us, like, you know, whether it's your coworker, you know, a coworker, your server, your cook, your fucking boss is an immigrant, you don't have any clue what they've, like, fucking gone through to get where they are. Like, bitch, you don't know my life, you know, kind of moment. Like, I just think everybody just open your eyes and fucking listen, yeah. You know?
Well, I think, yeah, it's just, I think we all have, it's like, it's just assumed that the experience of coming to America is, that is the gift within itself. And then everything is just roses after that, but it's not like you, and if you're working hard and you're doing the best you can, that's essentially, that should be rewarded. That's like that you're, that's a true heart. And especially in the food industry, which is so, so hard. I can't imagine to work, especially the ones that work like 2 or 3 restaurants and just juggle those insane hours and are just fine with it. And I'm like, and barely getting any sleep. I'm like, how do you exist? How do you work so hard? How do you have so many jobs and you still are happy to be alive, friendly to other human beings?
And yep. if you ask yourself that, you should ask yourself another question to be curious. What did they come from? Mm-hmm. Like, what did they move here from? Where something that I consider less than,
yes,
you know, than ideal is a pure source of happiness for them. Yeah. Then ask yourself a deeper question that this is a step up from where they came from. And that's the attitude we should have toward people who do want to live in this country, mm-hmm. and have empathy toward people who are running from regimes, from, you know, drug lord nonsense. I mean, it's, God, I know. We're such a spoiled, but unfoundedly spoiled group of people here in this country.
Absolutely. So let's just, you know, take a moment to, again, celebrate the diversity that we have bestowed on us in this country all the time and embrace it.
And also, you can always tip somebody. I always, like, if somebody's working hard in front of me in a restaurant and it's not my waiter, I will tip them instead too. Like, I will tip them on top of my waiter. Like, if I, like, this doesn't hurt anybody. Like, if you're, tip your grocery bagger if you want to. There's lots of ways to tip people.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that fully. Fully, fully. What a great learning moment we've all had today. Solomon, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a great, great chat. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm happy to chat.
Well, let's round out the show, Andrea. You know what we say at the end of each episode?
Oh, Godspeed.
And good tips.
Thanks, guys.
Good health, everybody. Thank you.